Hello, 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 people, and welcome back to another episode of the USL Show. And if you are someone who are video people, whether you watch the streams live, whether you go back and watch it on YouTube, or you like to go and watch it on goals.tv, thank you for watching it. And if you are watching us from Protagonist, hi, you're not used to seeing us here, but we're here, whether you like it or not. Thanks, Dan, for letting us do this. we're going to get to other things, but first, I just need to know, Phil, how are you doing, man?
I'm good. Yeah, a little bit of a break. Been busy with various different projects, so glad to be back and chatting some USL today.
Speaking of Protagonist, do you ever stop writing about the USL for Protagonist? Does it ever stop?
No, I'm not quite to John's level. John still has me significantly beat. But no, I've enjoyed it. And, now I'm just gonna be banging on, for this next month about the Netflix documentary we need about Las Vegas Lights.
30 for 30, but it is just 30 days to make a football team.
Exactly.
Speaking of John and the writing, first off, hashtag ad for Backheeled. A whole lot of good content, but also check out the Substack because some really, really good stuff coming out from, if you want to know some inside info on some, like, the whole friendlies, like, if you don't watch all the friendlies, he has the good stuff for you. But other than the plug, John, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I feel like when I write 1,500 words about a game that Memphis 901 played in an empty college stadium in February, that said something about my mental state. But
you know, that's fair. That is totally fair. But hey, right above you, and certainly not least, Ryan. Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I've actually broke the trend a little bit and took a few days off from running because when I woke up on Monday morning, I felt like my back was incredibly sore and I just slept on it weirdly. And I just thought to myself, is this what growing old is like? Your back just feels sore and it just doesn't stop for the next few days.
I had mine the other day. I went to go pick up a drum for the little kids. And I went to go get up and I couldn't stand up straight without excruciating pain. So I just hunched over and just suffered. And I was like, and the kids were like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I think I'm old. I don't know. It's crazy. Before we get too much farther, I have a couple of things. First, I want to thank our patrons, John Hunt, Frank Anthony, Aaron J., Christopher Cohn, Harry Austin, John Fuller, Michael Fuchs, and Joshua Duder. Thank you to you folks. Coming to your Patreon account, if you are a paid patron, on Thursday or Friday, the brand new show for the Glove of the Game. We have teased it. It's finally here. Can't tell you who's coming on the show quite yet, but this is a massive undertaking. We are getting goalkeepers from the biggest league in the world, which is the USL, taking every single touch they have on the ball, whether it be a save, whether it be a pass back, whether it be a goal kick. And we are talking to those goalkeepers and having them break down their decision-making. It is a ton of fun. It is just a massive undertaking, but it is also just a blast. And there's nothing else going on like this in the lower league sphere. Nothing else like this is going on. If you're not a paid patron, it's coming out on Monday. We highly recommend you watching it. If you don't want to watch it and you want to listen to it, you're not going to get the full effect because it's going to be a professional, like, film study with a professional athlete. So if your best bet is to watch it, but super excited about that coming out. And thank you to the patrons who will be getting that early. But I want to start off before we get into all the news, because we missed 2 weeks. If you didn't watch Kit Season, check that out. Phil, I have a question for you. All right. You have a child, right?
I do.
I want you to imagine we are about 3 to 6 years from now. Child walks up to you, says, Father, I want to be a professional goalkeeper. Okay. And you say, that's great. Now, would you like your child, imagine grown up child now, getting lessons from me, someone who once looked up how to get a coaching badge and got really freaked out and closed the page, and now coaching the high school team? Or would you rather get coaching from someone who did not just play, but is a champion of the biggest league in the world, the USL?
Wow. I mean, as much as I would love for them to be under your mentorship, Kaylor, I think the second or latter option might be preferred.
Well, listen to this. Whether you're a seasoned goalie or just starting out, like your child would be, the Prime Focus Goalkeeping President's Day Goalkeeping Clinic is coming up next few weeks, and it is perfect for honing in your skills and taking your game to the next level, truly raising our game here, people. It's an absolute blast, and you get to work with Brandon Miller and the group of coaches that he put together. You get to make new friends, have some fun, and he says learn from the best goalkeeping staff in the Carolinas. Scratch that. I'm going to say the Southeast. I'm just going to go ahead, take out his ad read and tell you that it is one of the best in the Southeast. And so, hey, go check out the website, see what it's all about. And hey, you know what? If your child doesn't ask you in, 3 to 7 years on round President's Day, guess what? They do coaching all the time and they are all here for you. Personal plug here. I bought some of the gloves because I needed new gloves for Sunday League, and it was absolutely pouring rain, and I was catching almost everything, and I don't catch everything. I suck, and I was catching everything because the latex was that good. Check it out, primefocusgoalkeeping.com. Brandon Miller, support your local USL legends, and it's also, yeah, support your Black owners. Do it. You won't. You should. Anyway.
The way you went into that marketing area, just completely cold, and none of us knew it was coming. That was the
I was like, what's happening? But no, I mean, ad read aside, I don't know, like, if Corinne wants to be a goalkeeper, like, I don't know if I could support that.
It'd be cheaper than being a hockey goalkeeper.
We want a striker. We want a forward. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, there is money in certain places for a reason, I suppose. But I kind of want to just go, speaking of getting money, hey, we got some big transfers. And there's one that we all kind of knew was coming, and one that was just out of nowhere. I want to start off with where my kit is telling me to go. I am wearing the FC Tulsa. Jeremy Kelly, out of nowhere, it goes to Crawley Town. And we found out via Crawley Town's Instagram. And then the next day, Tulsa comes out and says, by the way, roster update, which, you know, we're a big league when all the team does is post roster update and doesn't put in the social media post. That is truly big time, people.
Comunicado oficial. Like, yeah. It really is.
God forbid we get a corner flag post anytime soon. But, listen, it's wonderful for Jeremy Kelly. Gets to go over, gets a move, gets a transfer fee attached to it. Good for Crawley Town getting a quality player.
A team 14th in League 2 currently at the moment, but still with an outside shouting chance at the promotion playoffs.
And all you need is just a chance. Does League 2 have 3 promotion places or 3 automatics?
3 automatics, and then the next 4 are the usual promotion playoffs. I liked from his at least release on the Crawley Town website. They talk about him being picked from the MLS Super Draft for the Montreal Impact and immediately being traded to Colorado Rapids. And it just makes me think in my head, is there some like older English person who like clicked on this news thing is now trying to comprehend what a super draft is and simply trading players? And we're like, my immediate reaction, because that's just like not usual terminology you would see in like English player announcements.
just a dude who's had Crawley Town season tickets for 40 years or whatever. Like, what?
I'm pretty sure anybody outside of the U.S. sees super draft, they're assuming that someone's gone to war and they're being volunteered to go to boot camp. So I don't know. But I mean,
on the move, like, if you look at the announcement that Tulsa put out, it's clear that they granted him release. Like, there's no fee involved. He went to the team and was like, I'm signing here, but I've got a different opportunity. I've never played a game for FC Tulsa. Can you kind of just let me go to Crawleytown? So, I mean, big ups to FC Tulsa for letting that happen, because I think that's something that they could have said no to very justly, and they're letting him take that opportunity. But what you're losing in Kelly is one of the elite midfield creators in the USL. Like, what he was doing for Memphis 901 as a winger in 2022, playing a lot more central last season, so dynamic with the ball at his feet, really was going to be like the key creative cog that kind of opened up everything for Tulsa. And this is an FC Tulsa team that still has a lot of depth in the midfield. Like, what they're getting with Charlie Adams and Justin Portillo is huge. Diogo Pacheco coming in from Minnesota United too, really one to watch creatively. But Kelly felt like the linchpin in a way that's going to be hard to replace. It just makes it a fascinating story.
That was one thing I was going to mention was, you know, eventually was like, Jeremy Kelly, depending on how you're following the league or, you know, how you view each player, I thought Jeremy Kelly was the most important person they signed all offseason. Like, yeah.
I would agree. And I think, like, in Kelly, how they were shaping up, it really, well, I mean, yes, Goodrum was obviously huge to bring back. But I think the way that Kelly and Goodrum could have interacted could have unlocked Kelly, like, in an even deeper way, because Goodrum is so influential in this team and is going to attract so much attention, rightfully so, because he is going to be sort of the focal point of this attack. It just felt like Kelly's late runs into the box, like, and really the way that he's very good technically, like, a lot of his goals come from sort of opportunism on the rebound or ball, like, kind of first time hits in the box. And just felt like him and Goodrum could have really feasted in a lot of ways, where, you know, Kelly hasn't had too many like huge goal scoring seasons or anything like that, but it felt like maybe with Tulsa it could have. It's a pretty wild transaction to happen, and the timing is obviously really tough on Tulsa. Good on, like you said, John, I mean, good on them for allowing the opportunity. But this is a tough one. This is a tough one for the organization.
Yeah, one thing, I mean, what Rob Kraus brought up, I was going to bring up the same thing. I don't think he was really mentioning bringing back Philip Goodrum. I'm talking about they both came from Memphis 901, and last year around this time is when we got the devastated comments from Philip Goodrum, who said that he wanted to leave. He had offers to leave, and Memphis shut down. They both come from Memphis, and Jeremy Kelly instantly gets to leave for nothing. And this is me speaking as someone who maybe I know nothing. Okay, we know I know nothing. But if I'm an athlete who is young and up and coming, and I think I have a chance to go abroad or go to MLS, and I see a team that not only allows me to leave, but is willing to let me go for free, why would I not go there? Mm-hmm. Why would I ever go anywhere else? That's a place that you have freedom to go. And you, if you're Philip Goodrum, how much are you looking at Jeremy Kelly and saying, man, I'm happy for him, but God, if that was just me, imagine if I was anywhere else, that we were both at the same place together. You came and joined me and you got the move. Like, that has to be an absolute gut punch for Goodrum. And I'm sure that he's gotten over it at this point, but it has to be like, a really, like, we came from the same place and I got screwed over. Like, this sucks.
It's an interesting offseason for Tulsa, who also lost Blair Gavin to go take an MLS assistant job. They really had built a squad that was kind of designed to play what Gavin wanted, possessively using this back three with Arthur Rogers in the back three, really dictating play into that technical central midfield. Sanchez is a guy who was in the Louisville nexus before. You don't know if he's going to play the same style. Just a really tumultuous offseason for what seemed to be a really good start to the winter for Tulsa.
Yeah. Also, Jonathan Como, according to Harry, says that Oakland City Council approved the purchase and sale agreement of the former Raiders training facility, contingent leasing to Oakland Root/Soul, which that is awesome. I think they've been using the old Raiders like workout facility. I think that was already a thing. I think that maybe they're just, they've basically went to the council and said, we've been doing this. We've been here. Just why don't we just have it? And I'm pretty sure they were like, yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, it's a USL club that's now boasting that they have basically former NFL facilities to work out of, which is just massive, not only just for raising the bar of the league, but for recruitment to Oakland especially.
Also, think about the W League side of that, too, of, you know, that Northern California region in the W League is an absolute slaughterhouse. Like, it is, if you can make it out of that Northern California region, I back you to at least make it close to the finals. And for them to be pulling extra people now, because they have probably more than almost certainly the best facilities in the USL across any league, that is a crazy pull for Oakland. That's awesome. I want to move on to the other transfer I kind of alluded to that kind of happened today that we all sort of knew about. Nick Holiday from North Carolina FC gets his move up to Chattanooga. Wow, I do this every time. Charlotte FC, which an immediate loan to Crown Legacy. Rest in peace, Stumptown. And it's a great move. I mean, he was a young kid who got the opportunity to play. If you don't fully understand how Nick Holiday got his opportunity, long time ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, Jake McGuire was playing with North Carolina, had a bit of a moment of like kind of lost a moment of judgment, punted a ball into the stands in Greenville. He got suspended. Who comes in besides, I think it was 15 at the time, 15-year-old Nick Holiday. And for a not just a wooden spoon winning team, a bad wooden spoon winning team, he was an absolute bright spot. He won the job, kept it, and has been in, I think, almost every single U.S. men's national team like radar for goalkeeping. He's going to be the next one. He's just that kind of level of talent. And, you know, North Carolina gets a good transfer fee, and he gets a chance to go play some first team minutes. Admittedly, because Edwin asked, are they going to waste him at Crown Legacy? Unless something wild were to happen, Jake McGuire, who just signed back in North Carolina, was going to be GK1. He was going to be their goalkeeper one. Nick Holiday was going to be sitting as a GK2. Even no matter what you think of MLS Next Pro, a case like this where you're dealing with a young player who can get actual first team every single week minutes, I think this is a fantastic move for Holiday, and it gets good money into the club for North Carolina.
And not just that, you saw from just recent news, it was actually on January 18th that Charlotte FC promoted Shatari Adonze from their Crown Legacy team at goalkeeper into their first side. So they're already showing a pathway from Crown Legacy into MLS. And for a person like Holiday, it's kind of tough to turn down that opportunity to say, hey, if I do one season with Crown Legacy, perhaps next year Dean Smith will at least recognize my talent and promote me into the first team.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing with Holiday, like somebody who's been in multiple US camps, somebody who shows all of the athleticism and instinct you want out of a modern goalkeeper, really, he really didn't play a whole lot in the back half of the year for North Carolina just because of whatever circumstances. Like, this is a guy who's only started 26 games as a professional. He doesn't have like the biggest track record out there, but he is so recognized as arguably the best prospect in his age group in the US, notwithstanding Duran Fury, honestly. Like, there's a real sense in U.S. soccer circles that this guy is going to be big. It's great for the pipeline if you think about the USL moving, what, the third goalie of the offseason to MLS, their fourth if you count Fury. That's what you want out of a healthy pyramid, and that's what you want if you're North Carolina, who's put a real investment into their academy for years and years. Now they're getting into the phase where they're investing in those kind of late stage, let's finish the job prospects. They've got two highly regarded U17s from, I believe one from LA Galaxy and one from Portland, and one of whom is a Mexican U17 international. North Carolina, from top to bottom, is making the right moves, developing players like Holiday internally. Everything about it is how USL clubs should be striving to be run in the developmental side of things.
Yeah, North Carolina resembling Orange County, I think, and maybe taking a few notes from the success that OC has had in those developmental aspects. And yeah, I mean, at 18, like, when you think about the lifespan of a goalkeeper's career too, he is like so early in his development arc, and to get this move and have the chance to get that close to an MLS side this early is it's big. I think for all parties involved, it's pretty cool.
And arguably the goalkeeping spot for the U.S. men's national team right now is the most wide open it's ever been. I mean, from going from an era of the current Memphis 901 owner and NBC Sports commentator having the spot on lockdown for a decade, to now having multiple different options between Turner, Steph, and Slonina as well, there could be at least spots for players if they can get game time.
Speaking of one of the goalkeepers that got to move up, the name that I always pronounce wrong, and I'm going to do it again, Zimla, goes to nailed it. Never going to do that again. I don't have to. Philadelphia? Philadelphia Union. I just know him as the Union, and I realized I didn't know if it was Philadelphia or Pennsylvania, and now got really scared. Philadelphia Union.
It's the real life version of that It's Always Sunny clip of wait, Pittsburgh is in Pennsylvania.
I knew it wasn't Pittsburgh. I knew that one. Which, shout out to Bob Lilly getting a card in a preseason friendly. Love that for you, Bob. Midseason form, proud of you.
In a nil to nil preseason friendly.
He was so happy. Big move. And, you know, I talked to Evan Villela, who, you know, old USL show guy. He is one of our, you know, one of the guys who really showed us the rope for this show. And it was great. He talked to me a little bit. And if you watched Zimla, he didn't have the big flashy saves that you expect from the keeper to go up. It never felt like he was doing anything incredible, which A, tells you that his positioning was incredible. If he doesn't look like he's working that hard, it's because he put the hard work in with his positioning. And also, the biggest thing for me, that back line was not good last year, and he kept a good defensive record for them. He bailed out that back line big time. And I know that it's a little bit blasphemous to say that Luce's backline wasn't great, but it wasn't. And he made it look good on paper. And that earns you a spot to at least try to fight for, you know, GK2, GK1 at the MLS level.
I think the interesting thing when speaking to Louisville is that they kind of had to move away from the high line part of the way through the year. There was that a notable El Paso game where they got burned over the top a number of times, in fact. And I think Zimla was perfectly built to play in a little bit more of a conservative system. The guy is like an oak tree. He's like 6'4", got all the size you want out of a goalkeeper. I think he was tied for the league lead in clean sheets. He was up there in terms of catches in the box. And Kayla, you rightly point out that like you're never going to see those jaw-dropping, really athletic saves. But of all the functional skills that you want, Zimla's got them. He's got a championship pedigree in college from his time at Marshall. It's a really good move for him, well-earned. And it speaks to the fact that Louisville's doing it right. Like, they gave him the chance. They didn't put Kyle Morton back in net when he came back and was healthy, paying off for him now.
Yeah, it's I think it is interesting given the fact that it's like a down year for Louisville. So it's easy for people to kind of be like, well, why is Emma getting the move versus, like, you know, maybe other goalkeepers in the league who they might have thought had better years or played on better teams. But it's almost the down year for Louisville gave Zemla more of an opportunity to show his quality, and keeping 12 clean sheets in that team is pretty noteworthy. In a team that finished fifth, like, keeping 12 clean sheets is nothing to sneeze at. So yeah. All things considered, I think he's one that the pedigree's there. He's got, like, the education in, you know, in a pretty serious club in Germany in Karlsruhe. And, like, I think now he's entering his prime. You know, he's still, again, like, on the forward edge of that development curve as a keeper, because he's only 25. Where for other players we'd be saying, you know, he's sort of in his prime. It's like he's approaching his prime probably, but he's got a long time to go as well. And yeah, getting the move to Union. It'll be interesting to see how he like stacks up, I guess, in terms of, you know, whether we see him near the first team or whether he is, you know, sort of the way that we've seen other USL keepers go when they go to the MLS and they kind of fade into the reserves.
I mean, you're looking at a Philadelphia Union team who has a 33-year-old Andre Blake getting their usual kind of first team minutes at starting. And he could potentially also have time for where he's going to be called up to the Jamaican national team as well, which would then provide opportunities for Semla to come in and just kind of hold down the fort while he is in the team. And I think it's only Holden Trent as the other guy who he would be competing with for GK2 as well.
I want to take a question from the chat from Julian, which is thoughts on my club's Charleston Battery's goalkeeper situation. He says he's optimistic about Grinwiz. Grinwiz. We'll find out.
A pure W, but I don't know.
Yeah, normally if there's a W in the middle of the name, I'm just like, could be German. I don't know. I'm panicking. But he's a guy if this is the same guy that I'm thinking of, now, granted, it's been a little bit since he's had game time, so I could be thinking of the wrong guy.
Just but, real quick, he's not been a starter since 2017 with St. Louis FC. But
yeah. He, if I remember correctly, he is a decent shot stopper who is really good in the close quarters, kind of like shot stopping thing. He's one of those that just, when he was playing, had really good reflexes. I'm not overly sold on his distribution, which we saw later in the year last year was really big with this Pyramid system, was having a goalkeeper who can distribute effectively. You didn't really see, I mean, you saw a good bit of it, but not a too terribly amount of just hoof it long and get it out. They can't score from halfway. We'll see. I don't know. Going from Muse, who I'm going to be honest, I wasn't too sold on.
I was going to do that. Yeah.
Going from Muse, who I thought was just an okay goalkeeper last year, to Grinwiz, who is probably also going to be an okay goalkeeper this year. Maybe he's going to be great, and I'll eat my words. I feel like it's going to be net neutral from last year to this year. It doesn't feel like a loss, doesn't feel like a gain.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about the distribution issue, because I agree with you, I think Grinwiz is going to be pretty much at parity with where Muse was in terms of the goalkeeping performance and the shot stopping. Like, Grinwiz doesn't have to care. They're going to have Aaron Malloy just sit in the box and do what he does. And yeah, sorry, Dave Muse, if you are watching this broadcast, I know that you're a fickle fan of the USL show and what we're doing. I think Grinwiz is going to be good. And I think that the framework that this club has set up is kind of nullifying things that could be problematic about his game.
Yeah. He's got kind of in terms of like the deeper stats and things, he's got such a sparse, like, first team sort of appearance record that it can be tough to extrapolate from his numbers just how good he is. But across the first team appearances he's had, and this is at MLS, USL Championship, and in Next Pro, he is right under his expected, like, his conceded goals are is slightly above, like just barely above his expected conceded goals. 1.31 conceded to 1.24 expected conceded. So like he kind of performs like as you'd expect, essentially, is what the number says.
I mean, he's a former player from the 2015 champion Rochester Rhinos, which is always at least something I appreciate having, and still like longtime USL contributor still playing in the league.
Yeah. I want to go ahead and talk a little bit of League One, because we've been spending a lot of championship time. First off, I want to go out to Union Omaha Stadium. Stadium. Yeah. Hey, renderings look sick. The biggest thing to me is that apparently it's going to be in the heart of downtown. As soon as you drive into Omaha, like, it's going to be there. And when you're leaving, it's going to be there, which is super cool. Super love that. And for Omaha in the wider sports world, like, I like college baseball a lot. People go to Omaha for College World Series. Guess what? You're going to have a lot of people going to the College World Series during USL League One time, who are going to see this big, giant, fancy stadium and say, well, we're here. Our team doesn't play till tomorrow. Let's check out the big, nice, fancy stadium. That's so cool. That is so cool, and I absolutely love it for Union Omaha. And Union Omaha also decided we're going nuclear, and they've had a lot of good signings, more good ones on the way. But the big one, I mean, PC is being announced. Wow. John kind of opened my eyes. I thought he was like 37.
I thought PC and Yuma were the same age.
Listen, I've been watching this guy since he was on the Fort Lauderdale Strikers in 2014. Like, the fact that he's not even 30 is frankly ridiculous. He adds so much. I mean, like anyone who was on that San Antonio title game, you probably don't like him because he's so gritty and so in your face. But PC kind of backs it up with really high level technical skills. Like, he can hit a free kick. He's a very good passer. He's so smart spatially. He struggles with injuries and fitness in a way where I don't know if he can be the left back for that Omaha team. Just like, if you think about him matching up with Dion Akoff on the other side, that's too much of an imbalance of the speed and the ability to overlap. But PC can do the job as a number six or a number eight in a really meaningful way. And I mean, he's joining an Omaha team who also got Meshack Jerome, also got Aaron Gomez. Like, they're really powering up what they've got on that roster.
And this is also, you know, an Omaha team that just lost Doyle, that just lost Heal. Yeah. He is going to be kind of filling both of those spots if he wanted them to. If they wanted to go to a system change and just have him play as that six and eight and just say, we're just going to roll out one like holding midfielder, you're fine. And he fits kind of both roles that they lost. And that's really exciting for Union Omaha.
Shout out to Spokane for landing Heal as well. Like, that felt kind of significant, but wasn't that them, right?
Yeah.
So but no, I personally love that Dom Casciato is leaning into, like, I'm getting the band back together, and just finding a bunch of former Locomotive guys and then going out and getting, like, probably one of the players who gave Locomotive like the biggest fits in midfield in terms of just like game management. And I remember, like, just whenever, and any Western Conference team can probably remember, especially during the pandemic when we were all just playing each other like 25 times a season, those games in San Antonio, PC like always had like an imbalanced amount of influence on those games. And especially when San Antonio were so tough to beat, they relied so much on his ability to, one, win the ball. He wins a lot of fouls, even though he gives away a lot of fouls as well. Like, he wins a lot of fouls in midfield, takes the pressure off, just constantly finding those gaps, finding those areas, and just an absolutely infuriating player to play against. And I think he'll be like such a key figure for Omaha if they can find the right way to deploy him. But it does feel just as a general comment from a championship fan, like, seeing the offseason moves in League One, like, League One is moving differently this year, between like Lexington, Omaha, like, these guys are not playing around.
I mean, one of the biggest testaments to PC's own abilities is, like, whenever I do my usual lower division soccer save in the United States on Football Manager, whenever you look up, like, just free agents or available players to sign, he is almost immediately the first person on the top of the list of, hey, you should sign this person. He will honestly captain your team, and we should be expecting a lot of really big things out of PC within USL1 this year.
You kind of mentioned Lexington. I want to get to them in a second, because since the last time we've talked, they've continued their nuclear movement through the league. There was a moment last year with North Carolina where I think the whole league realized, oh, wait a minute, we're allowed to buy championships. We can do that. Like, there was this kind of weird thing in League One where they were just trying to sell their best players but never really replenish. But now it feels like the idea is, we're going to buy championships, we're going to buy good players, so when a USL championship team or higher needs a player, they have to pay us for them. And like Lexington and Union Omaha, they are really going to pay the dividends on this, because they're paying for a roster right now. Like, they are using their money and they are trying to win a championship. And I don't want to get too crazy into this kind of discourse, but, you know, I know there was been some online chatter from Phoenix fans about buying championships. I'm going to be honest, I don't see anybody bringing that up besides you, Phoenix fans. You're the only one saying that. But, you know, the whole, like, buying championships things, why don't you? There's no rule against it. The point is to win, right?
There's a salary cap.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's no rules in place to say you can't. The only rules in place are international slots. That's fine. And Lexington and Union Omaha are killing that right now. Obviously, other teams have other influences. Like, you have your tournaments that have their academy system that is so great. You have Richmond who are making moves. You have Greenville who move in their own way. Greenville's, like, interesting where they keep going after local college talent, and I love it. But it's also, I don't fully see the vision other than we're getting cheap college talent. I don't know.
Cheap college kids and Sebastian Velasquez.
It's like the same person. It's like that scene from The Fresh Prince, where Will Smith's in the flower costume with all the, like, kindergartners.
This is a deep cut for me. I got a power on that one.
We'll have to. Can we? I'm yelling at our non-existent producer. Can we bring that? Can we bring that clip up? No. Just keep
talking. Give me a minute.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the. I think it's clear that they've probably invested quite a bit in bringing Sebastian back, I'd imagine. That's not a player that comes cheap. Like, let's be real.
I think the thing is that there has to be intention with the way that you're spending and building these rosters. Like, sure, I mean, the Phoenix thing is weird discourse, as Kayla rightly points out, but, like, that was a team that was very intentionally assembled. They weren't just, like, building a USL All-Star team. They were going out and getting some guys who they scouted, who they applied the data analysis to, and it paid off for them. When I see what Omaha is doing, like, it fits a very clear mold of how Dom wants to have that team play. I don't want to say that Lexington feels like they're just kind of throwing money out there. it just feels a little bit less intentional with the fact that they've got like seven center backs, Cameron Lancaster up top, but how healthy is he? I'm not completely sold on the central midfield. Is Abel Caputo going to be healthy? Like, I love the talent in a vacuum. I'm struggling to see the puzzle pieces come together to paint a real picture, maybe.
The Todd Boehly approach to team building.
All right. All right. Somehow Ryan found this, and I'm really not sure how, because I looked up every version of whatever I could find, but give me just one second. I could at least have the picture of it. Where is it? Where is it? Is it this? Yep. Here we go.
Jonathan, you're muted.
Wild. I mean, the comparison of, like, for the audio people, just Will Smith being real tall amongst a bunch of children. Like, that's kind of the vibe for Sebastian Velasquez, who's like done it in the USL, done it in MLS, done it in Israel, going to Greenville with a bunch of college kids. That's so good.
They're even wearing green. I mean,
right.
I was really busy on a Fresh Prince deep cut search, so I have no idea if you mentioned the fact that Loera was
at no, and I think he's actually maybe the skeleton key who kind of makes things make sense for that team. But yeah, go off on David Loera.
I mean, just excited. I mean, like you mentioned, it is just the key facet that Lexington was missing. I love what Lexington is doing. I was kind of with you on the striker situation, Grant, with Cameron Lancaster. You also had a guy who scored, I think it was like 17 hat tricks in, you know, 18 games sitting in front of him. Cam Lancaster, I don't think is going to be the starter. He more or less feels like a super sub piece still.
I'm ignoring like Azad Liadi, who's a proven scorer in League One. Like, yeah. They've got the depth, but it just seems like, I don't know, something's holding me back here.
Yeah, here's where I think maybe this is where I am. Lexington feels like I don't want to say Hartford because that's mean, but they feel like a team where we're like, whoa, look at Lexington, but they're just kind of pushing all of their chips onto a area and didn't complete everything. But coming from San Antonio, which everyone's coming from San Antonio, you know, he was really, really good. He had a little bit of time in Orlando City, I think. He had a little bit of time there. Then he was with Phoenix for sure. And he and Atis have a lot of time together. They've played a lot. He's a super technical player who it can really unlock the middle of this field. And I'm really excited to see what Lexington can do.
It almost seems like you're looking at a Lexington team after year one. They were like, okay, that didn't work. Let's try and overcorrect and try and find a way to fix things. I mean, you're looking at a Lexington team who was third bottom in the league in goals scored. 46 goals scored in the league last year, but then bottom in the league in shots created. And they're just trying to find that spark to kind of really help their team this year. I mean, they at least took in another player from Louisville City of Isaac Cano on loan as well to try and help shore up a little bit of that help. So it's going to be interesting to see what Lexington can do this year.
Someone has one of those mustaches that you grow when you're like 17, you're really starting to explore the world because you got a license and you're like, shit, I can grow a mustache.
No one can stop me.
The seaweed facial hair from SpongeBob. Yeah.
Hang on. Is now that Lou City does this really cool thing where they play the kids. Shout out to Monterey for getting a U18 Academy. Shout out to you. Love that. Was Cano the one that either skipped his prom or had to immediately go from a game to prom last year? Or was that another one of their academy kids that they played?
It was either him or Carlos Mogul. I can't remember which one it is.
Because I remember, like, I think it was Mike Watts and, like, Devin were up there, like, this kid has his date in the stands as he's making his senior club debut. And it's like,
it was Colin Elder. So we've got even a third kid.
Yeah. just a third one that, you know, hey, Mike Watts and Devin Carr, pretty sure it was them, gave them a lot of love for him have basically being slightly inconvenienced for playing professional soccer right before prom.
Those dudes talked about coleslaw one time on a broadcast and they
hasn't stopped. Hey, I want to go look a little bit at Chattanooga because they're kind of, they said themselves, they're getting the band back together. Ricky Ruiz is back. You know, he goes there one time, leads the league in assist, and Trillick's back there. They got a whole bunch of other guys that have made their way back to the scenic city and super exciting. And I am weirdly buying into the Red Wolves project, and by weirdly buying in, I mean it's better than last year, but I'm weirdly buying into it.
Like, this isn't going to be a title contender. Everybody knows that. But the moves that they've made at the end of last season, kind of cutting ties loosely with a couple of players and really honing in on, okay, we found an offensive core that we're going to carry over into 2024. And that's Ropapa Mensa. That's Maele Malango. That's Jonathan Felipe, especially at the number 10 spot. And then figuring out what pieces do we need to have a competent defense and a midfield that can get them the ball. So you're getting Trilk, you're getting TJ Bush in from Tormenta. They've added a lot on the wings. They've got a ton of center backs coming in. Most notably, League One champion Gustavo Fernandez, mm-hmm. brother of Leo Fernandez and former North Carolina player. I wrote a big one about this on Substack a couple weeks ago. I just like what the Red Wolves are doing because this is a club that, let's be real, like they're competing for eyeballs constantly in that city. Chattanooga FC have poached a lot of USL caliber talent this offseason as they move to MLS Next Pro. So the Red Wolves need to keep up and they're making the moves they need to do so.
You know, let's go ahead and I just want to hit some rapid fire, just kind of moves. And I say rapid fire, there's going to be a couple of these I really want to talk about. Before we end with Vegas, because as all things go, it starts with Vegas, it ends with Vegas, and we're still confused about it. But I want to just go ahead a couple rapid fire. Augie Williams to Indy. Love this move for Indy.
It feels like a move that almost comes like a year late, if that makes sense. Like where him on last year's team, they probably are like one of the class teams of the East.
My brother is still coaching that team.
Yeah. the sliding doors moment. I think it's big that he stays in the East. I think there was I was sort of getting, and it's maybe not dissimilar from how the Dequa like stuff played out in that it started like maybe he's going somewhere else, maybe he's like testing the waters, and then ends up back in the East. But I think for the Indy team, it's just volume goal scorers in Indianapolis, like it just hasn't been a thing recently, and I think like him getting and leading that line does automatically make them a more serious prospect for 2024.
I mean, to pair him with Guinzotti and to have Addo Quinn in the midfield as well is certainly helpful.
Gross. Guinzotti on the slide got back to double digits in Indy, and I think the way that he's developed his game, Guinzotti, to really kind of be a second striker, drop into the midfield a lot more often. If that's the way he's progressing, having Augie Williams, who is going to do none of that supporting work and is just going to be a goal scorer, that's the sort of give and take you like at the top of this squad for Indy. And I mean, like they got Elliot Collier as well. Douglas Martinez can play striker. They've got a lot of options there. So Sean McCall is gonna have the pick of the litter for what he wants setting up this squad.
Do you have anything else to say about that, Phil?
Well, I was just gonna say, and they still have, I mean, they still only have 19 players, so like they have a little bit of room here towards the end of the offseason to try to bring in some pieces. I'm interested to see what direction they go, because it does feel like they could use, I don't even know what it, I guess defenders primarily, but they could use a little, you know, maybe one more piece to help unlock the most out of
the thing with this team is that they've got Maka King, they've got Chapman Page, they've got Adrian Dispe and Danny Barbier. Like, I don't even know how you're balancing that in the central defense.
And Gibson just came back, right?
You're right. And they're like Tyler Gibson. But where does Gibson fit when you've got Jack Blake and Aiden Quinn and Cam Lindley already? Like, they don't have the problem with this team, and it's been the problem for 4 years now, is that they just never get wingers. They never really invest in fullbacks. And like, I cannot believe that they went and got Augie and they got Collier and they're just like not going to sign a winger. That's crazy. But I mean, 4-4-2 Diamond, sure, go for it. But
Birmingham would never.
I mean, Indy 11 doesn't really also have a schedule that is the most forgiving to open the year. Five of their first six games are against teams who were in the playoffs last season. And that sixth game of the year is Charleston visiting Indy 11.
Kind of speaking about Birmingham and going to Eastern Foe, Nico Brett makes way from the Magic City over to the 901, which came right after Kyle Murphy announced his retirement, which that was weird. That was a weird time on the socials, being like, oh, Kyle Murphy retired after being like, our hero is home and he's dead now. Where's he going? And then it's like, Nico's here. Weird. Bizarre.
Well, as the Birmingham guy, what was your take when you saw that, other than like the Judas tweets?
Honestly, just posting Judas after, I think this is the fourth Birmingham player to sign for them, all in the last year. Just more of a funny thing at this point for me. Honestly, meh. Nico is a really good player. He is a really good striker. He's going to be clinical for this team. This Memphis team is attacking wise, I think, is going to be a problem. Nico is going to be a beast for that. But the biggest thing with Nico is that he did nothing off of the ball. If he wasn't scoring, he was a negative on the pitch. He wasn't making off the ball runs that made defenses, you know, freak out. He wasn't passing the ball through to create chances for other people. He wasn't getting in on the press and forcing mistakes. If the ball wasn't landing at his feet or at his forehead for a goal, he was doing nothing. And that's brutal. It's brutal to say, but there's kind of a reason why I'm not so upset that Legion moved on from him. Do I wish that we brought in an actual striker to replace him? 100%. And I'm, you know, whenever I'm saying where are the goals next year, because we don't have a kind of a real striker up there right now, that's where I'm going to be wanting Nico back. But I think that what he does off of the ball, and when he's not getting the ball directly to him with service, you're going to be left a lot to be desired.
Yeah. And I mean, last year he averaged a little less than two defensive duels attempted per game. Which is not crazy for a striker, but two feels pretty low. And then oddly, only won 20% of the aerial duels he had all year, which is pretty wild to me.
Hey, two-headed goals, though. Never forget.
So
wait, Nico Brett only won five headers all year. That's crazy.
Two of them are goals.
That's really crazy.
But I think, I mean, for Birmingham, it feels like in terms of the goals replacement, like it is just quintessential Moneyball of like, we can't replace him, but we can recreate him in the aggregate. And that is that is sort of the approach that it seems that they've taken from a goal scoring perspective.
I watch that scene like once every 2 weeks.
I've been living off of the Moneyball memes Twitter account. Like, I love that guy. Whoever that is, love them.
Well, and what was getting paired with Moneyball recently? Lord of the Rings. I was very much enjoying that.
Yeah,
I want to get back to Memphis in a second, but what are you thinking about Stefano Pino and is it Mohamed Touré is the name?
Mohamed Boya Touré. Most impressive thing about Mohamed Boya Touré is if you read the story about him, he skipped his own wedding because he had training that day. His brother filled in for him at his own wedding. Yeah.
An elder tried to match that.
Boya Touré, he was really good 4 years ago, never recreated the magic. I was not impressed with what I saw. He got a couple of chances, kind of squandered them. The biggest thing for me that I saw from him that I was impressed with was the thing I just talked about with Nico. His off the ball movements were fantastic. The way he was putting pressure on Atlanta back lines and creating space for other players like your Tabor Tech of Preston's, a lot of those impressive runs that you saw Preston go on, a lot of that space was cleared out by Mohamed Touré. That said, that's not enough to give you a starting spot, because if you're playing the nine, even though you're wearing 77, you have to score goals, and he didn't show me he could do that. I'm really just rooting for EJ Johnson at this point. But if you are now Stefano Pino, I think he's going to be just a bench piece. He's going to come on late in games. He's going to be a press the crap out of somebody and just try to win the ball when you're in a pinch. If he's starting for us, I'm kind of worried about what injury happened, to be honest.
Pino, barely saw the field for Indy last year in a way that's kind of surprising. I don't think he scored all season either. So it would be desperation if he gets those starting minutes. But yeah, just wanted the vibe check on that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to go to, like you said, Memphis, because that's the one that I'm intrigued about. Because Memphis, kind of like what Rob said, Memphis always had a striker up there that either was really good off the ball or was a really good passer, someone who could distribute the ball very effectively. They've always just kind of had that guy, at least if I'm remembering correctly. Nico doesn't really do that. So I wonder if this is going to be more of a just go long and figure out. But I mean, I don't want to make it too Birmingham-y, but if you look at the fact that you have Marlon Santos, who's played with Nico. You have Bruno Lapa, who's played with Nico. Akeem Ward never played with him. But, you know, those three guys who are going to be the heart of that midfield striking area have all played together. That's some good chemistry, and they all know how to get him to score goals. I think that's going to be what's interesting, because it's not like a new team who's never played with Nico before. They know what he wants to score, and I think that's going to help out 901 a lot.
Yeah, the thing, I mean, having watched that Memphis game and analyzed it in too much depth, I've been somebody who's been doubtful about this 901 team for a lot of the offseason, thinking that they just hadn't quite made the right moves. What I saw out of them in that Atlanta United friendly, and forget about the performances and the results, just in terms of fitting players to that style, it really seemed to mesh in a nice way. But especially in the first half, when you had Knight Pickering up top playing striker, bringing in that teenage energy, he got the goal on that counterattack real early on in the game. I was impressed by what they got out of the midfield. They paired Zach Duncan and Emerson Hyndman early on, or Hyndman, I always mispronounce that one. And Hyndman, honestly, seemed fine, but Duncan, who they brought in from the A-League, really showed me a lot of flash in a way that's going to be important. Numerically, in Australia, he was a pure destroyer, but he had a little bit more verve on the ball than I was anticipating from him. I thought he had a couple of moments where he and Bruno Lapa really tore through the Atlanta midfield. I'm excited to see how that comes together and whether we end up getting some real Pickering minutes by the end of the year.
I love Knight Pickering. I'm pretty sure he's a Birmingham native. Another one of those guys kind of slipped through the cracks. I love watching him play. He's in just another one of those young talents that you just can't help but wonder just how far he can go. It's one of those, and it's one, I think at this point, if you're Knight himself, you're thinking, I'm not long for America kind of kid. He does seem like he's going to be European bait very soon, and I'm really excited for him because he is just so much fun to watch.
And a candidate for the league's all-name team as well.
Oh.
They were calling him Knighta, like pronouncing the E on the broadcast, the Atlanta broadcast, and I'm really reevaluating things. Knight Pickering just straight up is the best name in the league.
Yeah.
Knighta giving me some second guesses.
it's opening the door for some other candidates.
Jason is normally really good at pronunciations. He normally gets them right. Which
that's why he was questioning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no. Knight is so much better than Knighta. I'm sorry, Knight.
I mean, it is his name, so.
It is his name. I'm named Taylor, for Christ's sakes. I can say whatever I want. I want to just kind of keep on going real fast with the, I want to just do it really fast. Claudier?
Oh, yeah. Claudier, whatever. Birmingham whatever it is. Coach.
Yeah, assistant coach and USL 2 development coach, which USL League 2 to Birmingham. Woo. Really excited about that.
Was there a formal announcement of it in tandem?
No, it's they just kind of dropped that in the headline and moved on. So he wants to go by just Knight from him and his parents. Thank you, Rob, for telling us it is just Knight.
See, that's the amazingness of a live chat.
Yes.
Best name in the league.
Best name in the league. Brandon Claudier. I'll find out. Sure. Honestly, we kind of talked about it in the USL show Discord. Maybe got the chop prematurely when Orange County won the championship. It was a bit of a shock. And he's kind of remembered as the guy who got fired so they could win, which was unfortunate for him because he did seem like a quality coach. I'm excited to see what he can do developmentally. He's one of the guys that was there at the very beginning of the Orange County Academy dominance. And so if you're someone looking to start your academy, I think there are definitely a lot worse places you can go than taking someone from Orange County to run your academy. Seems like a smart decision. Excited about that one. Don't know how much of a role he's going to have in the assistant room, but if he's head of League 2, super exciting for Birmingham. I want to jump to, I think, is the biggest player movement for weird reasons. Lawrence Wyke to Phoenix Rising. And the moment this one happened, I said, I'm sure that the Phoenix fans will be calm about this. And you know what? Weirdly enough, they responded more calm than I thought they would. If you aren't aware, Lawrence Wyke was suspended for 12 games for insensitive racial comments versus Monterey Bay. Then it was overturned for insubstantial evidence, which how did you have insubstantial evidence if you suspended them 12 games? That's a long story that we don't have a lot to go into. We talked about this in depth. I think it's still our pinned tweet is that actual day talking about that. I'm pretty sure I think it was there. It's been time for change, I think is the name of the episode. That was kind of what it was. Get past all that. he's a decent center back, and I don't know how well he fits this Phoenix team, but also we don't really know what system this team's going to play. We can assume it's going to be a continuation of Garibald, but also not necessarily. You get a whole, I say whole, you get a full preseason to tinker with the system. I don't know. It was weird. Everything about it was weird. I don't know what to make of it.
Well, he's solid enough as a center back or a center mid, kind of in the same way that Carlos Harvey is, and hence Harvey's off to MLS. So you're kind of using Wyke in a similar role. I do think that they're going to end up playing a similar system to Garibald too. But I think the bigger thing is Wyke with this baggage, with somebody who has like sued the league for damages at his reputation, which is a crazy move, honestly. And to make this signing announcement, what was it, 2 days after the USL DEI initiative came out? Like, I believe in second chances. I believe that in this context, it was hard to know what happened and what's provable. But I think that, and Rising say that they did their due diligence. They talked to him. They conducted an investigation. You wonder about the way that it was handled in context. You wonder if, what was the community talked to and communicated with in a way that you would want? Because it seemed from Bandidos and other Phoenix groups that they were kind of taken aback by this happening. So I don't know what to make of it. I think that it probably wasn't handled in the right way.
Yeah. The reading some of the comments, in there was an interview that PHNX did with Brandon McCarthy. And so if you want the full, like, I would just encourage you to read that article to get like kind of the full picture. And I think there's a lot that Brandon says, and don't get me wrong, I think it's a great organization. Phoenix, like, they take a lot of care with a lot of things. And in this particular case, it does feel like they sort of went out on a limb, and I'm not really getting why necessarily. They also sort of like supported some of Lawrence's claims that like that there was no way to prove it as like innocence, and those are two very different things. Like, just because we didn't capture like lip reading on a camera on the couple of angles that we have like in a USL broadcast, like, that doesn't constitute innocence. And like, Monterey Bay still maintains to this day that it did occur, like, that the abuse did happen. There was no, like, just because the USL rescinded its suspension did not mean that player felt that it didn't happen, or the people on the field felt that it didn't happen. It's just they felt like they couldn't prove it. So the reality here is that, like, I don't know if this is the limb that I would necessarily go out on. It just doesn't, it just feels a little, it feels a little strange. And yeah, I don't know. I don't really understand the move in that context.
I want to, someone who supports Birmingham Legion, we signed Junior Flemings. I still hate it. I'm still not happy about the decision. It's one of the things that I still don't agree with what the club did, but the supporters members were talked to before pen went to paper. They reached out to both LGBTQ plus groups in the area, talked to their like board about the signing. They talked to Landon Donovan and, oh God, I'm blanking on his name. Oh no. Who was it that Junior attacked?
Oh, Colin Martin.
Colin Martin. Thank you. I had Colin.
Yes.
I had Colin, cannot think of the last name. Thank you. Talked to him. And as a part of the We Are Signing Junior Flemings, had that, all of that, in the post that said, we are doing this. We talked to these people, these people, these people, these people. We've talked to everyone involved in the situation. The thing with Phoenix, they had Junior Flemings at the time. They've already had kind of a stain on the record. And I don't want to hold that against them. But when you've already had the stain on the record, people are slowly forgotten that it was Phoenix. It became more Junior, not Phoenix. Because if you remember at the time, it was Phoenix and Junior. They finally got away from that and became just a Junior issue to this. And I kind of feel for Brandon here because I don't think he's a majority owner, but he's definitely the most outward facing owner, which means he's probably going to get the most
director now too. Yeah.
He's going to get the backlash. And it's one of those situations that in the interview, they said they talked to Lawrence, but did they talk to people from Monterey Bay? And if they did all that, why wasn't that in the press release? Why were we trying to bury the lead? That's where my issue comes. Because whether he did it or not, we can't prove that. But you know that this guy comes with baggage. Why not get in front of that and not just deal with the PR disaster right away?
It's an impossible balance, but you hope that every stakeholder in the community is talked to and feels heard in these processes. And that's got to be the goal for everybody going forward in these scenarios.
Just have transparency and just the decision-making process would be huge. And that goes for not just this situation, but for pretty much every situation the league will encounter.
I have myself on mute. I want to just go ahead and talk real fast because, as all things go, we always talk about I'm sorry. What is this? I am reacting live here. Is today the 6th?
Yeah.
When did Las Vegas add Kendall Burks?
San Antonio added Kendall Burks.
Oh. Why is this on Vegas's website?
Did they accidentally publish something from the league feed? Because that'd be real funny.
They had typos in their announcement for their new sporting director. Misspelling their own team as well.
I'm on Vegas's website, and it says... Yeah,
Vegas still has no players. Let me just put that on the record. Yeah. February 6th, zero players. Netflix special incoming.
That was a real moment.
Got a team in 32 days.
Okay.
The worst rom-com ever.
I know we're joking about this. I would consume every single second, every frame of that show. Like, if we got an actual documentary of Dennis Sanchez and Jean-Leonardo Nelia building a squad from scratch, this is what we need. Like, I don't know who could possibly produce this. Can ESPN do a 30 for 30? Like, this is the most interesting story in the USL. Like, who is going to show up when Vegas plays that first game in Memphis? Like, who's going to be there?
Jose Bautista.
Their new sporting director has a Scrabble total score of 21.
Yeah.
Jose Bautista is gonna be hitting dingers at AutoZone Park or whatever. So,
oh my God, can we get Jose Canseco back and just see who can pump more softballs into the stands?
Yeah, give me some sort of Bash Brothers halftime show. I love this already.
That did happen with Jose Canseco at halftime of a Vegas locomotive match. Canseco did a home run derby in Cashman.
Let me throw in a quick good word for Dennis Sanchez, by the way, before we're completely off the rails making fun of Vegas. He was with Charleston for a stretch. He's credited with being the guy who discovered Fido Barajas and being the guy who scouted Juan Palma, who took over the center back role down the stretch for them. So really good eye for talent. Did a fantastic job with Austin and MLS Next Pro. As far as a hire, I heard that Miami really wanted him this winter. So, like, Vegas doing what they did here kind of speaks well to the early returns from the Bautista regime.
On top of that, looking at Gio Leonardo, I'm not going to get that one right.
We're killing the pronunciation.
We're doing great. My thick Southern accent does not make things better here. He comes from Venezia, which they have two or three American players there, and he scouted them from the U.S. So he's had an eye on the U.S. already. It's not like this is a brand new landscape for him. He kind of understands how it all works, and I think it's a real deal sign of intent. I'm really excited to see what Vegas does going forward, because I mean, Michael Fuchs comes in here and says, "Life to be filled with League One legends like Don Smart." I mean, Don Smart just being a USL legend at this point. I mean, Championship, League One. I would pay good money for them to basically just do USL and not even like All Stars, like we kind of saw with Indy last year. I just want to just get USL players that everyone just kind of knows. Just like you played minutes. But speaking of kind of with Vegas as well, I mean, I think Nicholas Murray had the what if, and it was like Trejo and Cal Jennings stayed in Las Vegas. I think that was on there, which that would have been fun.
And a great article too.
Great article.
The Venezia thing. Remember Otar Magnus Carlsen from the Roots, guy who's got 20 goals on loan. That's a Venezia player. So
yeah,
I'm completely out of the blue thinking Las Vegas, huh?
Busio two lights.
There we go.
At minimum, he's worked now for two clubs that, in my opinion, have great kits.
True.
Yep.
Look, I am excited to see what Las Vegas does after this year, because this year is like all 6 years we've talked about Las Vegas. It feels like a wash. But next year, I mean, this looks like this is a real front office with real coaching, and that's exciting. Really, really stoked to see what comes out of that. But hey, yeah, if we can just get Vegas, if ESPN's not in on it and says we don't want to do Vegas, get Vegas and Central Valley together. Hey, who can actually put a squad together? Announce the squad before day one, because last year Central Valley did this thing of we had him on the roster the whole time. It was a 25-day contract, every single one of them. like, we're not going to mention that, but you know, I would pay good money just to see the two and like just want to know what it's about. I don't know. We haven't talked a lot about Central Valley. You know, we want to be excited with
to talk about.
I know we want to be excited because of Jerome. I want to be excited. They don't have anything. The biggest thing we got was, oh yeah, Bajev retired. Like, rest easy, Phil. The U.S. Open Cup safe again.
I still have trouble sleeping at night thinking about Villian Bajev in the Open Cup scoring bangers against Lokomotiv.
We need the draw for the Open Cup to fix a Las Vegas Central Valley matchup.
Nah, the worst part of me wants to watch it.
You talk about a wooden spoon.
What's the opposite of the Super Cup? The two worst teams from both leagues playing each other.
Well, then it would be Hartford against...
it wouldn't even be Vegas. Hartford. I did have one random thing based on it. So I think I'm assuming it's Andy in the chat for the Orange and Black Soccer Cast. But I do have one random thing about the assistant who went to Phoenix. Yeah. So I do have it from a source close to the situation that this was not a Nisa like cock up in the way that they typically do of like, oh, we just like, you know, screwed something up or something like that. It was truly like the timing was he gets hired as the coach at Irvine Zeta, this expansion team in NISA, and then gets offered the Phoenix assistant role quickly after. And they sort of moved to like Tulsa, where they were like, yep, that's a bigger opportunity and like go for it. So not a total like egg on your face NISA moment. That there will be plenty of those. This I don't think is actually one of them.
Diego Gomez is an interesting guy. He played all over the world. He was in Hong Kong coaching for a bit, and he was related with the I'm forgetting his name, David Villa Academy coaching setup, to the point where he was the manager for the Queensboro youth team that did so well at the Academy Cup. When he was at Queensboro, 3 years ago, he reached out to me to like just get lunch. So I've like shared some pupusas with Diego Gomez, and he's a rising assistant coach.
RIP Queensboro.
Yeah, gone but very forgotten.
Gone that and forgotten.
That should be the new show. John just like gets like meals with different assistant coaches, like an Anthony Bourdain. To like just go to each fan base and just
tactics on scooters getting put, yeah.
See, we need like our own spin of like Hot Ones, but I'm thinking it's all basically like Popeye's biscuits, but you don't get to drink water, and the interview goes on, and it just slowly devolves into also I'm looking at Irvine Zeta because I feel like I know a lot of lower league soccer. I have never heard of Irvine Zeta. And on their thing, they have the kits. Nice kits, by the way. And the pictures of the kids' kits are just children dropping soccer balls. And the camera is really blurry. And I'm just really confused. They're selling socks and backpacks.
This is so cool, man.
Hey, I mean, we can't cast too much shade because Vegas and Central Valley exist. Like those are teams in the league right now with nothing going on. Now, I mean, Vegas obviously is going to have more going on, but you know.
I mean, yes. I'm not going to just shame NISA because we have our own that we have made fun of, but when I open up an image and I'm trying to find out who Irvine Zeta are, and they're selling white socks, backpacks, and having children just dropping soccer balls. Not even just they're wearing the kit, but you can't even see the kit because the soccer ball is blocking it. And they said, this is the one.
If you showed me that logo without the clip art soccer ball on it, I would tell you that's like a hedge fund.
I was just about to say that. This is someone who manages someone's retirement firm. I'm going to have to like call this person to ask about my 401k.
I was going to say they just bought my 401k, I think. Yeah, classic.
All right. This is... we hit about 1:15 on the show, and it always ends with Vegas.
Evolution.
All right. Does anybody have any final USL thoughts for the night?
Stream your cool preseason games.
Cut us off, yeah. Taylor.
Cut us off. Yeah, just click it off now. Please stream your preseason games. If they're going to be closed friendlies, at least like stream them. Oh, that is a USL thought I had. Birmingham just randomly uploaded their open like tryout video, like the unedited version of the game, the final scrimmage game. They just uploaded it, and there's like 2 hours of film of nothing there because no one turned it off. No one turned off the camera, and they just uploaded it.
So good.
And if that's what you have to do to give us preseason friendly videos, I'll take it. I'm a sicko. I watched like 45 minutes of that open trial game. Dang it. I will do it. But anyway, final thoughts for the night, Ryan.
Yeah, I've been going through the Studio Ghibli filmography lately. So last week was Howl's Moving Castle and Princess Mononoke. Hey, I would still probably say Spirited Away is my top pick as my favorite one from the studio. But yeah, definitely recommend both Howl's Moving Castle and Mononoke as well.
Love it.
John?
Yeah, I feel like I've just been busy lately. Like, I don't know what it is about this time of year where it's just been a lot for me. I guess I'm excited to go watch Madam Web and laugh at how bad it is.
Fair. Fair. Phil?
Behind in my like media consumption is that's starting to feel like a lot, because I feel like I'm not keeping up, but I finally got around to watching The Bear, and I'm mad at all of you on this and all of you that have watched The Bear that listen to the show, because you should have bullied me about watching it more. It is one of the finest pieces of television that I have ever laid eyes on. And some of the best acting like in a television series, maybe ever. Yeah, just unbelievable. And I'm pissed at all of you for not being meaner to me about watching it, because I needed to see that.
Hulu.
I got to meet Evan Moss Backrack, whose cousin Richie just like, he was just in a movie at the same time I was. It was so sick.
That's insane, because so Evan Moss Backrack, I had to look up where he was from, because I was like, this guy is a Chicago, like he is a native, right? Like with this accent, he's from Amherst, Massachusetts, and he just absolutely nails a like not super fan, like over the top caricature Chicago accent, just like truly like sounds like he's from there. Whoever his dialect coach is absolutely murdered it. Apparently it was like some Teamsters that he knows from Chicago. So so anyways, like, yeah, The Bear is like just absolutely unbelievable. I'm still obsessed with it, and apparently season 3 starts filming like this month, so I'm looking forward to that when that drops. I will not make the same mistake again.
Hearing just random unmet actor like in random place is always so funny to me. I think the only one that I have is there's an actor, Michael Rooker, who's from my hometown.
Yeah.
And I was dating a girl at the time, went to her family reunion. He was just there. I had no idea they were related.
That's awesome.
Like, I sit down and I'm like, I recognize that guy. And I was like, probably being from a small town thing, I'm just going to start eating ham. And they were like, Michael Rooker. And I'm like,
Yondu is at my barbecue. Yeah.
Wild. Yeah. I need to watch The Bear. I've seen so many good things about it. I haven't seen any of it. I know nothing about it other than I was told that I need to watch it. And I'm going to need to figure out some way to stream it. I'll figure it out.
You need to watch it.
I'm looking for something to binge. So, yeah. All right. I mean, yeah, the work life has been crazy. It has been absolute madness, but that is okay, because, you know, we get to come on here and do this show and do everything else. Kit season on Thursday. Hey, last Thursday, Mark Crosby from Hummel was on, and if you want to hear,
was so good, Kaylor.
It was so much fun just to talk. It was so much fun to hear. So if you want to know about, you know, all that stuff, this Thursday, Diaza, we are interviewing the guys from Diaza, so we're talking to them. Super fun. The new show for the Glove of the Game comes out on Monday, Thursday, or Friday if you're a patron, and a lot more coming. We are getting into the thick of it. It's about to be a lot of fun. Thank you all so much for watching. Thank you for all so much for listening, if you are listening to podcast players. And I think I mentioned it before. The new logo is sick. And in the upcoming months, stickers coming out. Super excited about that. But that's enough of you know, plugging all the things. I need to go to bed. Thank you all so much for listening. And even though it wasn't here, here's Alan's voice.
Thank you for watching another episode of the USL Show.
The USL Show is now proudly part of the Protagonist podcast family. Please go to protagonistsoccer.com to check out more work. Thanks for stopping by. We'll see everyone again next time.